This podcast of The Exchange is sponsored by
Dartmouth Hitchcock, creating a new model for healthcare where leading health systems collaborate to improve care for all of us. A sustainable system improving the health of our communities for years to come. Information at imagine.d-h.org.
And Northeast Credit Union, helping their members save money through free checking accounts and refinancing of auto, home, and personal loans. Northeast Credit Union, encouraging you to discover the difference at necu.org. Federally insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Opportunity.
And Doucet Survey, serving your professional land surveying and mapping needs in New England, now with offices in New Hampshire and Maine. Information at doucetsurvey.com. That's doucetsurvey.com.
Enjoy the show.
Support for The Exchange Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is made possible by Eastern Bank. We're here, you're first.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. The Senate Finance Committee yesterday took a key step toward a state budget. Committee members approved a plan that's $99 million more than the House's version and $66 million less than the governor's. Finance Chair Jeanne Forrester called it a balanced approach.
We were very thoughtful in putting this budget together, and as I said, we didn't just listen, we acted.
On the presidential front, the Republican field continued to expand as former New York Governor George Pataki kicked off his campaign in Exeter on Thursday. Meanwhile, a day earlier in Concord, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders drew an enthusiastic crowd of Democrats, including Jeanne Aldrich, who clearly preferred Sanders over Hillary Clinton.
We need to move ahead. What can we do to get this moving forward? And I'm like, why can't we ask Hillary to give up her spot and give it to you?
And on Capitol Hill, a new study of bipartisanship finds New Hampshire's U.S. senators among the most likely to reach across the aisle. And an example of that emerged this week on the issue of the Veterans Choice Card, which allows vets to seek health care outside the VA system. Here's Republican Senator Kelly Ayotte.
Veterans in New Hampshire need to know Senator Sheen and I are working to get this right for them so that they can have the choice of what provider they want to go to make sure that they get the health care that they so deserve for having served our country.
It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup in The Exchange, and let's hear from you. Give us a call. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guest for the roundup this week, Kevin Landergan, chief political correspondent for NH1 News. And Kevin, great to see you. Thank you for being here.
Great to be back, Laura.
Also with us, Jeff Feingold, editor at New Hampshire Business Review. Jeff, lots of business stories this week, so thank you very much for being here.
Great to be here.
And also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, welcome back.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, Kevin, I did want to start with you. The state Senate budget got a lot of play this week. It's not final, but the Finance Committee approved a plan yesterday. What jumps out from this plan for you, Kevin?
Well, certainly the Senate made a lot of changes to the House, restored a lot of cuts to human services and education programs. But really, what strikes me as kind of startling this time is how partisan the process has been in the Senate this time. You may recall 2 years ago when they adopted a budget, Chuck Morse was not the Senate president. He was the Senate Finance Committee chairman. He was able to get a 24-0 support for the budget, even a budget that Governor Hassan criticized after it was passed. This time, Democrats are dug in the Senate. They're very unhappy with the fact that this budget does not expand Medicaid permanently. They don't like the fact there isn't any pay raise for state workers. They think some of the budgeting is also not transparent, that there were a lot of moves that were made to bring it into balance that Governor Hassan's strongly been against this time.
Well, that's an important point. And you're right, Kevin. I do remember now 2 years ago, everybody saying, wow, this is a bipartisan budget and not the same dynamic this time around.
No, I think some of that is a reflection of Chuck Morse is now the Senate president, not actually running the budget. Jeanne Forrester is the chairman now, who I think is certainly doing a capable job, but it's the hardest job there is, really, for a Senate budget writer to try and bring both parties together on such a big document. And you can't help but think whether some of this partisanship is really driven by Governor Haas's political future. As she thinks about possibly running for the U.S. Senate, are a lot of these pokes and prods that the Senate Republicans are making trying to make things difficult for her? As one Republican political operative explained to me, it's really not about trying to defeat Governor Haas on policy. It's really about tying her up and keeping her in her office and not and trying to put out fires and not able to get out and meet as much with voters as she weighs this decision.
Okay, real interesting. So, Dean Spiliotis, the Medicaid expansion that Governor Haas included in her budget, the House did not, and now the Senate did not. And that was a question going in because the Medicaid expansion plan was crafted in the state Senate last time around. What do you make of the way the state Senate is dealing with this Medicaid expansion question?
Well, you recall that getting the initial program in place was a bit of an ordeal. It took a special session in November that didn't result in the expansion, and then it kicked over into January. And Republicans in the Senate kind of argued that they brought Governor Haas over to their position of a program that is more focused on private health insurance. So, we'll see. When you listen to what a number of the senators are saying, they're not saying we're ideologically opposed to this. They're saying let's wait a little bit longer, see how the program's doing next year. So the question for me is, what kind of – so it's not clear to me that the program won't be expanded. I mean, I think we hit the 40,000 subscriber mark at this point, and it's really hard to undo those kinds of things once they're out there. So I think it's becoming part of the system. I think it's going to be hard, even if they put it off for a year, it's going to be hard for the Senate to back away from it. And the question for me is what kinds of guarantees or IOUs or suggestions about the future will Governor Haas be comfortable with in order to go forward with the budget? The budget is up from 11.2 billion for the House budget. We're up to 11.3 now. There are about 118 million additional in revenue that the Senate had to play with. Governor Haas was 11.5. She's not going to get an $11.5 billion budget. Where is that gray area in there? I find it hard to believe that they're going to tank everything over Medicaid, particularly because I think next year it probably will. There's a good chance it would be expanded, but we'll see.
Yeah, not part of the budget process, though. That's the question.
Right, taken out and dealt with as sort of a separate issue.
Just kind of repeating the history of kicking it down the road. It's not going to be a special session, but it won't be part of this session.
Right.
But I have to say, on the Medicaid expansion, besides the really very impressive number of people who've signed up already, it's way ahead of expectations, is the Hospital Association came out with a study not too long ago about how they've seen a really pretty dramatic drop in the number of people using the emergency room, of unpaid, people without insurance using the emergency room. And that was one of the main goals of this, is to try to drive down the costs, the uncompensated costs of hospitals. And they're reporting that they're seeing it right now. And that was one of the goals of the BIA and other business groups in supporting Medicaid expansion, saying, we want to get that uncompensated care cost down.
Let me jump in here just for a second, guys, and I want to ask you about business taxes in this budget. But I also want to remind everybody it's the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. We'd love to hear from you this week. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Right now, we're looking at the budget put together by the Senate Finance Committee. The full Senate has yet to vote, but the process is moving along. Let's get your thoughts, questions, comments at 1-800-892-6477. So let's see, Dean, you look like you wanted to jump in, and then Kevin. Yeah,
just a quick broader comment. We're talking about Governor Haas being, boxed in by Republicans and her political future. I will say, in having observed her for a while now, one of her skills as a politician is an ability to kind of package outcomes in a way that are sort of helpful to her case as a politician. So, my guess is whatever she gets out of this, somewhere between 11.3 and 11.5, she will figure out how to package it as good for the people of New Hampshire, that there was a compromise. Even if she's largely on their grounds, she will figure out a way to communicate this as a success. And I think that's a testament to her sort of political ability as an elected official.
Go ahead, Kevin. Yeah.
I'm just going to say two things. With regard to policy, this is exactly the way Medicaid expansion was adopted in the first place. It didn't come as part of the budget, and that's what Senate Republicans are saying. It was a separate discussion. There are a lot of decisions to be made. Two points from their perspective. One, the cost of the state of New Hampshire since this program has started has actually increased more than the state thought it would cost this program. So they're very concerned, as President Obama leaves office, is Medicaid expansion going to get more and more expensive? The second and more important point is we haven't converted all of these folks who are now getting Medicaid expansion into the private insurance market, which, after all, was what Senate Republicans insisted on and going along with the Medicaid expansion.
That was the sort of New Hampshire way.
Exactly. And they want to see that transition and see how it works and whether private insurers can really assume all these folks and what is the impact to these clients once they're moved into private insurance before they decide whether to permanently expand it.
Wow, so lots of questions, Kevin.
Right.
Yeah, so business tax cuts, Jeff, I did want to ask you about that. This budget does include some tax cuts for businesses. Tell us a little bit about those.
Yeah, actually, Kevin mentioned before these pokes and prods at the governor. I think this might be one of the top of the list because what they're doing, the Finance Committee voted to reduce the business profits tax, which is basically an income tax on large corporations, and the business enterprise tax, which is a tax on wages and interest and dividends. That gets all the other businesses, and those are the two biggest money raises in the state government, and they voted to lower them over a period of years. It would the 2-year effect on the budget would be $14 million less. The thing is that people have been arguing that this is important to show that New Hampshire's business friendly and all that, but on the flip side, there are a lot of people saying, well, wait a second, if New Hampshire wants to be business friendly, why are we cutting all this money from the budget? We need to fix the roads and pay education and other things, energy efforts that really would also help attract businesses. So it's kind of it's an interesting little opposition there. But the thing is that's really interesting is that by putting this there, they're like basically daring the governor to maybe veto something that has this tax in it. And if she does, would be a huge issue, whatever office she decides to seek in 2016.
So it's a philosophical issue, Jeff.
Yeah.
It's what does it mean to be business friendly? Does it mean lower taxes?
Exactly.
Does it mean great roads and wonderful schools? What does it mean?
Absolutely. And you know, when you look at surveys and just by talking to business people, I do that all the time. Business taxes are not at the top of their list. They're not. Actually the number one is energy costs, because New Hampshire has some of the highest energy costs in the country. And that's really one of the things that's preventing businesses from moving here, from expanding here. And it's a major concern. And you know, that's something that they really want to see addressed. And it hasn't really been touched this session. Yeah, it's on the outskirts, but it's not really it hasn't been front and center this session.
There was one business that I definitely want to ask you, Jeff, and the others about after a short break. And that's Planet Fitness, a chain of fitness centers with headquarters in New Hampshire, which said this week it was so unhappy with a certain facet of business taxes here that it threatened to leave the state. So we'll definitely talk about that in a moment. Also, we'll look at a new scorecard of bipartisanship in Congress, why New Hampshire and Maine are on the map with that. We'll find out more about these stories. Stay with us for the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. This is the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. We're covering some of the top stories of the week this hour, and we're going to turn in a moment to some headlines from Capitol Hill that affect New Hampshire. There was a new study of bipartisanship in Congress that highlighted New Hampshire. We'll also look at an issue called Veterans Choice Card Program and how that played out politically this week. But first, I want to return to the idea of business taxes and why that's such a big deal in New Hampshire this year. 1-800-892-6477 is our number. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Jeff Feingold, again, editor at New Hampshire Business Review. So what is going on with Planet Fitness? Why is it so upset about the way New Hampshire's business taxes are structured?
Well, basically, just a few days ago, Planet Fitness, founded in Dover, based in Newington now, very, very successful gym franchise.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
They have estimated $2 billion in revenue, 900 facilities around the country. They put out initial public offering, which was they want to sell stock to the public.
So they've been privately held up until
privately
now.
Privately held,
now
absolutely.
Now they want to go on the stock exchange.
And actually, it's been anticipated for quite a while that they would go public because it's been so successful. And the timing, I don't know if it was on purpose or not, but then it turns out that just in another day, they had appeared before the legislature, and they're asking for basically what they call a carve out. There's under the business profits tax, you get taxed say, they say if a corporation sells part of itself to the public, the money that they get from the public is considered, you know, part of the BP, business profits tax, so they get taxed, you know, 8.5% of that.
From that one-time sale.
Yeah. And what happens is that Planet Fitness says this was an onerous tax on them, because if they do raise, let's say they do raise, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, they'd have to pay 8.5% of that. The interesting thing was that really it's for people who've been around a long time, as Kevin would and I have been, this is almost like a flashback to what happened in the early 90s, because in the early 90s, all we have is the business profits tax. And at the time, perhaps the most successful business in the state was Cabletron Systems, headed by Craig Benson. And they were really upset that they turned out that very, very few, just a handful of businesses really were paying the business profits tax. Everybody else, there was no such thing as a BET. So a small business would say, that's my personal income, and they couldn't tax it.
So sort of big manufacturers were paying the
absolutely.
Business profits tax, but law firms, successful doctor's offices,
yes,
other small
and
practices.
And those were the specific examples that they gave. What happened was that Cabletron sued the state, saying this is unfair, and they also threatened not to expand here and all that stuff. And what happened was that we ended up creating the business enterprise tax, which captured all these other smaller businesses. Now this time, Planet Fitness is threatening to move out of the state or not expand here. Right now they have a little under 200 people working there. They say they're going to have 500 people, but you know, we don't know. But the interesting thing is that Craig Benson is on the board of Planet Fitness, and he's also, I guess, a franchise owner. So there he was, you know, basically using similar tactics to what he used in the early 90s to convince the legislature, at this point the Senate, of doing this carve out for Planet Fitness. And it's kind of an odd situation to see this happen again.
Yeah, great historical background there, Jeff. And Kevin, how did the Senate react to this request, demand from Planet Fitness?
Well, the Senate Finance Committee approved the carve-out request, but Senate President Chuck Morse was quite open about the fact that there's a limited number of weeks left in the session. I know this thing is going to have to undergo some change. He was obviously concerned about what the revenue commissioner had to say about this carve-out, which essentially is this could be a significant loophole to the state, costing lots of money, as not only Planet Fitness, but many good-sized, sophisticated firms would be able to gain the same advantage. Now, you know, on the flip side, you had folks like Bill Ardinger, who's a longtime lawyer, lobbyist, tax law expert, who kind of acknowledged, hey, I've advised companies to move out of New Hampshire if they want to go public. That's how significant he feels this competitive disadvantage is. So Senate Republicans want to do something. They're going to pass this carve out, but I think they recognize this will probably go to a conference committee. It's a separate bill. It's not attached to the budget. So House Speaker Sean Jasper has already assured Senate President Chuck Morse that that's what we'll do with whatever you do. We won't agree with what you do, so we can go to a conference committee and try and work this out over the next 5 weeks.
So kind of like Medicaid expansion, it's a financial issue, but it's not part of the budget.
Correct.
Yeah. So is there a precedent here, Dean Spiliotis? I mean, if Planet Fitness gets this change, could other companies say, I want the same deal?
That's the concern. You know, I was just going to mention briefly, it's interesting that the CEO said it would be cheaper for him to move to another state and cover the raises that would be required to keep people whole when they have to pay state income tax than it would be to lose this money. But yeah, I mean, one of the arguments against this is, in kind of general principle, is that when you do these kinds of carve-outs last minute, there's not a lot of time left. Inevitably, there are unintended consequences. There are very smart tax lawyers out there who will then sort of figure out how to use this to the advantage. And the concern is that, you know, it may end up in a loss of unintended revenue. And so I'm not sure what's going to happen, but I think that's the concern.
All right. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. And gentlemen, let's go to our listeners. Roger's joining us from Stratum. Hi, Roger. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange.
Good morning, Laura. Thanks very much.
Sure.
In the beginning of the year, Senator Forrester and Senator Stiles warned against raiding dedicated funds, and I think the House budget raided the Renewable Energy Fund to the tune of $51 million. Does the Senate restore that? And where do we go from here with respect to that?
Roger, thanks for the question. Kevin, I'm going to throw it to you.
Yes, they do. The Senate budget does restore all that money, which is certainly a significant sum, and will be negotiated in the final compromise. Interesting to note, too, that over the last previous 2 years, in the past, the legislature has raided this fund before under Republican and Democratic administration. So, Senate President Chuck Morse has been a staunch defender of dedicated funds. He's not wild about them, but as long as they're on the books, he says they should be funded.
Jeff?
Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't about $1.5 million of that fund going to be used for Homeland Security or some kind of—
Yeah, it's a little bit of it.
Yep, yeah, they are. Yeah.
Okay, and they said, Kevin, that that was okay because it was kind of related to energy.
Yeah. If you will. The I guess Homeland Security protects the electric network that serves our state. Maybe that's the reach they were going with. But there were a lot of those little gimmicks at the end.
Okay. Roger, thank you very much for the question. Again, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And to Lebanon next, Jay's on the air. Hi, Jay. Go ahead. You're on the exchange.
Well, good morning. I've been curious for a long time now because New Hampshire is supposed to be a no-income tax state, and I'm a business owner, by the way, and I pay an income tax on all of the wages that I earn and all the wages I pay my employees. So can somebody explain to me the difference between an enterprise tax and an income tax other than who gets to pay the bill?
Yeah. Jay, thank you very much for the question. Again, Jeff, good thing you're here today.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, that's a point that has been raised since— before they created the business enterprise tax, because you know a lot of people look at it as a payroll tax that you're paying a tax on the payroll of the income of your employees and of yourself, as you said, and it's something that doesn't get discussed as much as you think it would, because this is a state that does pride itself on not having an income tax, but you know they try, that's why they call it the business enterprise tax, I guess, instead of calling it the business, you know, the New Hampshire payroll tax, which is basically what it is. And it's kind of a small raise, 0.75%, and I think if it ever got higher, I think more people would be maybe up in arms over it, because it's still at this low rate. Now, I'm not saying that that your tax bill is low, but you know it's at a relatively low rate. But I think if it ever reached that 1% mark, I think really then we might be looking at a much larger debate on this.
And the Senate, right, is looking to lower it.
So looking to lower it, absolutely, absolutely.
Between now and 2019,
yeah,
I think.
I'm just saying in the future, but it is in reality is a tax on your wages.
Okay.
You know everybody's paying it.
Jay, thank you very much for calling in. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Dean Spiliotis, here's an email that gets to the next story that I want to talk to you about. This is from Christopher in Manchester. He says, in your headline, you mentioned Ayotte and Shaheen were found among the most bipartisan. In the week he announced for president, I think it should be noted the same study found Bernie Sanders least likely to work across party lines. So let's back up a little bit. Thank you, Christopher, for the email. Just remind us what this bipartisan study is all about.
Yeah, this is an interesting study. It's the kind of thing political scientists like to do. This came out of Georgetown University, and what they did was they looked at all 100 senators, and they in 2013 and 2014, and they counted essentially the number of times that you as member of one party signed on to co-sponsor legislation originated by a member of the other party, and vice versa, the number of times that you were able to draw people from the other party to co-sponsor your legislation. And they came up with a ranking of bipartisanship as a result of your ability to cross the aisle on legislation. And New England generally does quite well. Senator Susan Collins of Maine was number one in terms of reaching across the aisle. Our senator, Republican Senator Kelly Ayotte, was number seven. Gene Shaheen was also in the top 25 as well. So New England, you know, does reasonably well in terms of bipartisanship. That could be a function of, you know, to some extent, either, you know, New Hampshire sometimes viewed as kind of a swing state. Other states in New England are blue, so you may find Republican senators more likely to reach across the aisle in order to stay politically viable. So for whatever reason, both of our senators were in the top 25. As you just mentioned, Bernie Sanders ranked 90th out of 100. So that'll be interesting to see whether he has any messages of bipartisanship in his presidential run.
Well, and to your point about, you know, New England having this mix of sort of purpley hues, especially in New Hampshire. Kevin Landrigan, is bipartisanship necessarily a selling point? I mean, some people could say, hey, that's great. You work across the aisle. Other people might say, look, you're giving up on your principles. I want somebody who's going to stand up.
Yeah, it's always that's the balance that every incumbent tries to manage. I think it is important in a state such as ours, where independent voters play such a major role in a general election, that the largest group of voters, and in greater numbers than most states, independent voters vote here. In many states, they vote in very small percentages. So it's real important for you to make that bipartisan message. It's primarily, I would have to say, in the last, 20, 30 years, the reasons why incumbents have been defeated either in the Senate and the House, that they didn't come across as folks who could work across the aisle well enough. They were too doctrinaire. That certainly is something Senator Ayotte is acutely aware of as she prepares to run for re-election in 2016. Democratic operatives, in fact, were complaining last several months about the fact that Ayotte's office was going to Democratic offices and saying, can I co-sponsor this bill? Can I co-sponsor that bill? It's that is kind of the problem with a study such as this that looks at a short window, in this case, 2013-14, because inevitably, senators who are up for re-election are going to try and appear more bipartisan in the last 2 years of serving than in the first 2 years of serving the six-year term. I mean, that's, again, the nature of the beast.
Well, it's interesting. And Jeff, I can see you want to jump in. Then I have another question for you. Yeah,
I was just going to say something about Senator Sanders is that, he's an independent. He's not a member of either party. So you could argue he's reaching across the aisle. anyway.
So to the point, though, that Kevin made about how Senator Ayotte has been reaching across the aisle a lot lately and showing up with Jeanne Shaheen at all sorts of events. Jeff Feingold, the two senators last Friday agreed to give President Obama what's called fast-track trade authority. Now, the vote was 62-37. Most Republicans voted in favor. Jeanne Shaheen also voted, though, in favor. So let's talk about Senator Shaheen for a moment. Why did she join dozen or so Democrats in favor?
About 13 Democrats voted. Yeah. This is not a very popular agreement. It's a Trans-Pacific Partnership, which would be basically like a NAFTA or with the Asia Pacific region, and she came on board with that, it's not surprising because she seems to have supported this kind of stuff before. Senator Ayotte also joined her in supporting it. I noticed the other day that Congresswoman Custer is supporting the partnership. She has said she would support it. The fast track authority just basically let the president come back with this deal, and they have to vote up or down on it, and you can't amend it and all that stuff.
So it sort of gives him, it makes it easier for him
to negotiate
trade deals.
Absolutely. But then there's a big segment of the Democratic Party and the Republican Party as well, who really oppose this authority, and actually they oppose the agreement as well. There's concerns about labor deal, environmental rules, and all this kind of stuff that comes up with all these agreements.
It's the
agreements.
Same kind of issues that swirled around NAFTA. You NAFTA remember the North American Free Trade Agreement in the 90s. Same kinds of issues.
Absolutely, absolutely, and it's something that's it's a contentious issue. But that's, I guess, an example of Senator Shaheen's bipartisanship working with Republicans on this.
Okay, and then Senator Ayotte this week and Jeanne Shaheen both took great care in New Hampshire, Kevin, to talk about the Veterans Choice Card and really telling veterans, look, there've been some problems with the rollout, but we're on it.
Yeah, and certainly this is a bipartisan achievement by both Senators Shaheen and Ayotte, something Ayotte can talk about in a re-election campaign. They got the change in federal law, which essentially says if you don't have a full-service veterans hospital in the state, then those veterans should be able to go to another hospital with this card to get services, as long as a veterans hospital is more than 30 miles away. So other than in the Upper Valley region where you're very close to with the White River Junction, Vermont Veterans Hospital. This is an important program for a lot of veterans, 130,000 strong in New Hampshire. But the mechanics of this program have not exactly been smooth in terms of setting it up. There's also concerns about it, its permanent funding status over time. So both Senators Ayotte and Shaheen wanted to hear vets talk about how it's working and what they can do to permanently make sure it's on firm footing.
Okay. Again, the number for you to join the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, join a conversation. It's the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR, 1-800-892-6477. Real quick, Dean Spiliotis, I did want to ask you about a story that made headlines in part because it relates to this national conversation over police tactics, the video recording of those police tactics. There was a mistrial just this week involving a Seabrook officer accused of assaulting someone he was arresting a while back, Dean, right? I think it was 5 years ago.
Yeah, this is Seabrook officer Mark Richardson, and he was accused of assaulting a 19-year-old drunk driving suspect, Michael Bergeron. Anybody who watches any television news has probably seen the video clip of the incident that was part of the trial in which the officer uses a tactic called an arm bar to gain control of the suspect. The video looks like he slams him very hard, basically face first into a wall. The defense argued that he was a very unruly, difficult suspect. They showed earlier video of him being problematic when they were trying to control him outside before getting inside. So, I've probably seen this video more than any other video in the last year. It's just anytime there's a story about this case, they just run that video of the face slam over and over and over. But it ended up being a mistrial. The judge declared a mistrial. So now I think it's up to the state to decide whether or not to try this again. We'll see.
So a mistrial just kind of means we can't figure it out.
The jury could not decide one way or the other. So they have to, there's an option for a retrial in the future.
Okay. Coming up, we will turn our attention to presidential politics, including the newest entrant on the Republican side. And for Democrats, Bernie Sanders draws a passionate following in the Granite State. We'll hear more coming up on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. It's the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange. And with our first in the nation presidential primary not that far away, new contenders are jumping in. Here's the latest official candidate to declare on the Republican side.
Too many Americans feel the path of opportunity is closed to them. We must make sure it's not. The problems we face are real. But I've never been one to dwell on problems. I'm a solutions guy. When you grow up on a farm and you have a problem, you don't ask the government to solve it. You just figure out what needs to be done and go do it. That's the American way.
All right, and that's New York Governor George Pataki making it official in Exeter, New Hampshire yesterday. And love to get your thoughts on George Pataki. Dean Spiliotis, correct me if I'm wrong. I think he's made forays into the presidential race before, although he never made it official.
Yes, he took a look at running both in 2008, 2012, didn't get much traction, decided against it. He is open about the fact that he's facing an uphill climb. He's somewhere 1% or lower in the polls. He's a former three-term governor of New York. I mean, there are some real structural problems to him being a candidate in the Republican Party right now. He's pro-choice. He's pro-gay marriage. When he was governor of New York, he had strict regulation on gun control, the environment, and the climate. None of those are going to resonate with the base of the Republican Party. That's a real problem. He's running as a small government reformer. He wants to...
A solutions guy.
Yeah, ban members of Congress from ever lobbying once they leave Congress, so completely locking the revolving door. But he'll be an interesting part of the conversation. He's a serious guy. He's been involved in kind of pushing for reform. He has a leadership pact that has run a lot of ads about reforming the system. But it's just going to be really hard for him to get traction. I mean, New Hampshire, if you look at Iowa, New Hampshire, and South Carolina, New Hampshire is really the only place he's going to have any hope of getting traction. My guess is we may see him do, you remember back in 2004, Connecticut Senator Joe Lieberman, like, rented an apartment in Manchester. I mean, I think we may see George Pataki actually moving up here for the rest of the year, because it's really his.
Chris Christie, too.
Yeah, both of them. But he's even in a tougher position, I think, than Christie. So certainly part of the mix, but he's just an uphill battle. And I've seen a number of media outlets run packages about the fact that nobody's interested in him. Like, they show him in an empty news conference, or no media scrum around him. So he has to be careful. He does end up being kind of mocked, even though he's very serious about this.
Well, so here's the question. I'll throw this to you, Kevin Landrigan. So people talk about Bernie Sanders, you know, pulling the Democratic field, Hillary Clinton, to the left. Could George Pataki pull the Republican field more towards the middle, given his more moderate views, as Steen describes?
I think that's possible, but it's not a winning formula, even in a purple state such as ours. I think running on a socially liberal agenda is a really hard sell for him. He does have a compelling story if he can get enough independents to vote in this primary. After all, I mean, this is a guy who, while he was governor, cut taxes, had significant economic growth in a state that was dominated by Democrats. It's the second most liberal state in the nation, and the Democrats have controlled the legislature there for decades, yet he was able to accomplish a lot of things. His biggest problem is the character deficit. I mean, he is, as you heard in that soundbite, he's methodical, he's thoughtful, as Dean described him. He's not fiery.
Not a lot of pizzazz.
Exactly. And that's what he really lacks. And that's really difficult. If you don't have that in a race with this many candidates, you've got to get noticed. And I think he's going to have trouble getting noticed.
So he could make the case, Kevin, that, I'm a good general election candidate.
Exactly.
Look how I was able to be successful in a blue state.
But
go ahead. Jeff, you're a former New Yorker, right?
Yes, exactly. And I remember George Pataki very well. I have to say, it's interesting that he doesn't just have competition for just the general Republican voter, but there are other candidates who'll be vying for that independent, for the New Hampshire independent voters, like Chris Christie, Jeb Bush will be doing it, others, and so he's got a lot of competition. And what was it? There are 8 declared candidates right now. Is that right?
Keeping track for us.
Thereabouts.
Thereabouts. All right. Even he doesn't know.
Yeah. I've lost track. Roughly, who could count them?
But there's going to be what? There might be 15 or 16 of we don't
or
even
20.
Know. Yeah, or 20. So there's going to be and his voice is not going to be quite as loud as some
and
of these others.
He's probably going to be excluded from the initial debates if
exactly.
they go through with
if,
his
if they
this
do that Fox
formula,
News limit.
He's going to be out in that, and it's going to be tough.
And it's kind of sad, because he does have some things to raise, but I think in this current political climate, especially in states like Iowa and South Carolina, with the Republican primary voters the way they are, he doesn't have a chance to get any kind of traction in Iowa.
A more conservative voter base.
The caucus voters there are very conservative. Evangelical Christians, they're not even going to be listening to him.
So that brings up another candidate, Jeff, and I'll throw this to you since you mentioned it. Not in New Hampshire, but Rick Santorum did announce this week. Yes. Now, again, Pataki came to Exeter to make it a New Hampshire thing, and that's probably why some of the issues that Kevin talked about. Rick Santorum also did announce this week he's going to appeal to those evangelical Christians
in
Iowa.
And if we remember, he did actually win the Iowa caucus back in 2012, but he lost traction in New Hampshire, where he really didn't do very well.
Because that's
the thing. The Iowa Republican voters and the New Hampshire Republican primary, which also includes independents, it's a much more moderate field of voter in New Hampshire.
Okay, I just want to remind our listeners that as we talk about these presidential candidates, if you happen to see any of them tromping around the Granite State over the past week,
you can't miss them.
If you happen to bump into one while you're at the grocery store, give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. One more time, the number, 1-800-892-6477. Kevin, did you want to jump in there too?
Just about Santorum, he's trying to rewrite history again of that 2012 campaign. He was here a couple of weeks ago, and it was the second time he was in the state since 2012. So
not very much.
Not very
compared
much.
To and Chris I don't, Christie
and
or
I don't
Jeb
sense
Bush.
He's going to make any major effort here. Hire a lot of staff, he's going to try and basically rewrite the playbook and hope. And basically hope with such a large field that a win in Iowa will mean even more to us a few weeks later or 10 days later or whenever it occurs than it did in 2012.
It's interesting to think about it because, you know, in Iowa, the Republican caucus in Iowa is something like 65% evangelical. It's a completely different type of ideological dynamic.
65%?
Yeah, it's about 60-65% evangelical, self-identified evangelicals. It's just a very different environment. You know, you come to New Hampshire, where the second least religious state, according to Pew, behind Vermont, and not by much. You know, I saw it in 08 with Mike Huckabee, who won the Iowa caucus. I saw it in 2012 with Rick Santorum. They come flying out of Iowa with all this momentum, and it's like somebody literally sticks their foot out, and they trip. I mean, it feels literally like they're tripping because they get here, and people want to talk about a different set of issues, you know, libertarian, economics, foreign policy, and they try to kind of shift their message. And it didn't work either time. And I think, you know, Santorum ended up with essentially a second place finish behind Mitt Romney in terms of the whole primary season last time. So, you know, viable candidate. But I think we're just not going to see him that much this time. And I think probably the same for Mike Huckabee.
And something else that should be mentioned, that when Mike Huckabee won in 08, he did not run in 2012, but he is running this year. So, you know, there's Santorum's problem is going to be he's going to be facing that opposition. Plus, there's Scott
Huckabee's
Walker.
Huckabee's in the top five in a lot of polls now. So it's a different situation
exactly.
than Santorum.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a big field, and some say this time around, Dean, a stronger field.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot more options. There, as Jeff was saying, there's probably more than one candidate for each kind of ideological corner of the party. Yeah, there's a couple from each column to choose from. I'm still sort of – there's still, you know, four or five people, Bush, Walker – Rubio, you got Rand Paul in there, John Kasich, the Ohio governor, is probably going to get in, and then, you know, maybe Chris Christie. So you got five or six who are really competing, but there's a Quinnipiac poll that just came out, a national poll, had Ben Carson and Mike Huckabee tied with Rubio, Bush, and Walker, all at 10%. It's wide open.
This is something interesting that happened to me last week. I was a moderator of a couple of panels at a Disruptive 8 Health forum. And it was amazing. They did this thing where they asked people who they supported for president. And these are a lot of people, venture capital type people and all that stuff. Ben Carson was their number one choice. It was really quite...
Well, he's up in that Quinnipiac poll. He's in the top five.
Because of his health care, because of his stance on health care and the free market and all that stuff. And it's really interesting that, you know, this is obviously an informed audience right there. And they're all of a sudden, they said Ben Carson's their number one guy. Bernie Sanders was second, by the way. So.
Wow.
That's quite a combination.
That is, yeah.
Good idea of the audience.
All right. Let's take a call, gentlemen. And Paul is on the line from Concord. Hi, Paul. Go ahead. You're on The Exchange.
Well, hey there. It's Paul Steinhauser, Kevin Lanigan's colleague over at NH1. I heard you guys talking 2016 stuff, so...
Couldn't resist.
I want to get in on the action here.
Great. Go ahead, Paul.
Well, no, you were talking about Santorum, and it was pretty obvious that Rick Santorum learned his lesson from 2012, that New Hampshire is not his cup of tea. Last year, his main guy here, Mike Biondo, who was his key strategist here, last year when he went to Rand Paul, I think that was the signal to everybody that Rick Santorum was writing off New Hampshire. And I asked him about that when he was here. Kevin, you just mentioned that he was here in the state about 2 weeks ago. And he said, no, I'm not going to write off New Hampshire. He's writing off New Hampshire. He'll have a few people here just in case he catches fire in Iowa and will want to bring his show on the road over here. But he realizes this is not the state for him. It's just not the electorate, as you guys were mentioning. And one other thing, you just mentioned Ben Carson. I want to see more of Ben Carson here because people are raving about him. I've caught him twice now in the campaign trail. He's not done that many events yet in New Hampshire. If I were Ben Carson, I would be up here as much as possible now that all his speaking engagements are pretty much over with.
Well, Paul, I'll ask you, since you're kind of surveying who's coming in and you're trying to get people, you know, obviously on your airwaves, who's making themselves readily available and who's tougher to get a hold of and tougher to get on the air?
Well, if you're lower down the list, it's very easy to get. George Pataki, I think between Kevin and I, we've probably interviewed him about 20 times, right? Lindsey Graham, right? I mean, but when you get higher up the list, Jeb Bush is always tough to get. I usually can get him, only a minute or two with him. So it really depends on where they are and what they need. If they need us, if they need the media, or if they want to come on your show, if they want to come on with Kevin and I, they're going to make themselves available. But the higher up they are in the polls, the harder they are to get.
Okay. Paul, thank you very much for calling in. Good to hear from you.
Have a great day, guys.
Bye-bye.
You too.
You know, we haven't talked yet, guys, about Bernie Sanders. We mentioned him a little bit before in that email from Christopher, who said that he was found to be one of the least bipartisan senators in that study. Bernie Sanders did announce his campaign earlier this week. And then Dane Spiliotis, he crossed the Connecticut River very quickly and came over to New Hampshire.
Yes, he had a big kickoff rally in Burlington, apparently about 5,000 people.
Wow.
Catered by Ben and Jerry's, which is a nice touch. Yeah. he was in Concord on Wednesday at the New England College, has a location on Main Street. It was a packed house, even though it was hot. I think they said maybe 300 people showed up. You know, he's very passionate. He has a passionate following. He's become kind of a vessel for progressives who are unhappy with the idea of a Clinton anointment as the nominee. So there's a lot of energy at the grassroots to have somebody else in there. You know, he talked about, just for example, investing $1 trillion in infrastructure, free tuition for all state schools, I believe, or all colleges. I mean, I would love to see him get that stuff through the current Congress, but nonetheless, that's the kind of stuff that is exciting progressives who are listening to him. You know, my general feeling about, you know, whether it's Bernie Sanders or Martin O'Malley or Jim Webb or Lincoln Chafee, other Democrats who are thinking about running, you know, the prevailing narrative for the foreseeable future is going to be, what is their impact on Hillary as the nominee? So, you know, let's say Bernie Sanders has a great run in New Hampshire and gets, you know, comes in second, a nice showing. The discussion is not going to be about him as the potential nominee. The discussion is going to be about what's wrong with Hillary. What does she need to do to kind of shore up her run to the nomination? And so that's a very difficult narrative to unseat. He can try, and I think he's going to be an important voice in the discussion. But we're going to continue to talk about this stuff in terms of the impact on Hillary as a nominee, not on the likelihood that this guy is going to be the nominee.
Well, the other thing that reminds me is like, history can repeat itself, because I think Bernie Sanders does at this point have a good chance to do well in New Hampshire. We know him here. You know, I've heard him for years. You know, he's familiar. The thing is, though, that in the early 90s, Pat Buchanan won the New Hampshire primary. You have to remember that.
I remember that. Peasants with pitchforks.
It was Bob Dole, 96.
Yes, 96. And in 92, we almost beat a sitting president in the primary. Because New Hampshire voters can be kind of quirky. And they could say, you know, we're just going to do it. We don't care who the front runner is.
And that was populist, the pitchfork brigade.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And if Bernie Sanders is anything, he is populist. He is a populist. You know, he might be a populist on the left, but he's a populist. And it's a conceivability. When we're talking about, you know, what, 6-8 months away or something like that, and he could catch fire. I think the problem is going to be for someone like Martin O'Malley, because he's not known here. And, you know, what's his message going to be to the New Hampshire Democratic primary voter?
Yeah, I think the paradigm, too, in the Democratic Party is even stronger than in the Republican side, Buchanan notwithstanding, which is to say, the liberal base of the party does not like to be told by the establishment who they're going to support. We've seen it time and time again in New Hampshire. Liberals essentially say, oh, really? You want John Kerry? Well, we're going to pick Howard Dean until he bombed out in Iowa with his speech that night. Oh, really? You want Al Gore? We like Bill Bradley. What about Bill Clinton, who was the establishment candidate? We'll go with Paul Tsongas.
Exactly.
So Bernie Sanders, he certainly has a shot of making it a very competitive race. But to Dean's point, in all three cases, Al Gore, right. John Kerry, Bill Clinton, they all ended up with the nomination after very good showings in New Hampshire.
Wow. Well, completely switching gears, although invasive plants, I don't know if I should draw the connection between presidential politics and invasive species.
Well, I think that's a very good comparison.
Dean Spiliotis, real quick, there's an invasive plant that just environmentalists and people at UNH Cooperative Extension and so forth can't stand, Japanese knotweed, but a chef at Moxie Restaurant on the seacoast is using it as a side dish. Now, what do you make of that? And people say, by the way, it's delicious.
Yeah, it's
Seacoast Online, by the way. They get credit for this story.
Japanese knotweed. I learned something new here. It's fast growing, gets to the size of corn stalks. It's like bamboo. It can grow through asphalt and floorboards, so it's very, very sturdy. And apparently, you literally have to, after you cut it, you have to kill it because cutting it increases growth, and just leaving it on the ground, it'll regenerate. But apparently it's good in pie, and it's good pickled as a side dish with seafood or something else. So maybe there's some new crop potential here, but it is a real threat to the waterways in the seacoast and in rivers.
Well, and too bad we can't use it as a source of renewable energy or something.
Because it sounds like you have to burn it or
right?
something.
Jeff talked earlier about New Hampshire's energy issue.
That's
all right. Well, some
That's
smart
right.
person at UNH can jump on that. Jeff, what are you going to be following next week?
Well, actually, next week we're going to be following the evolution of this workers' compensation bill. That's been an issue that's, you know,
yes.
that's also been high on the agenda of businesses in the state, because that's been a object of reform for many years now. A House panel voted just the other day to set up these medical fees structure, and that's very controversial.
Yeah,
and,
it's a biggie.
But we'll see. We're going to be following the road that it takes.
Okay, and Kevin, I'm going to guess you're doing the budget, and
yes.
Dean, I'm going to guess you're doing presidential candidates.
Absolutely.
No shortage of fun stuff for everybody. Thank you guys for being here.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.